On this episode of The Long Box, we'll be discussing the history of Cerebus, talking about the all-new Avengers, also discussing the old series, The Ultimate Vision, and Tom will be talking about the horrible stereotype known as the Mandrill.
I pack my clothes and grab my single issues and wrap them up tight and make a list so my collection's complete.
Picking Outside the Long Box, I once again am Thomas Strange, enjoying the beautiful weather here in Memphis, Tennessee. And my good friend LT is over in Boston. Boston, LT, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, Tom. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. You guys all ready for this show? And of course, I'm almost forgetting, Mike Manning down in New Orleans, the Big Easy. How's it going?
It's going well, Tom. Thank you for asking.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. How was Bourbon Street down there? Are you getting drunk? What's going on?
Well, my mom, who just turned 84 years old today, came down to visit, so hell yeah, I'm on Bourbon Street getting drunk.
Now, remind me if this is a true thing or not, but you're going to a convention with your mom, and your mom is going to be cosplaying as Aunt May. Is that correct?
Even though I like it.
Yeah, she is going to be cosplaying as Aunt May, and my nephew, Jeremy, is coming down also, and he's going to be cosplaying as Spider-Man. And I believe that you had a plan to cosplay as Uncle Ben.
So someone can cosplay as the robber and stab me in front of both of you and cause a whole chain of events that leads you to become Spider-Man. That sounds awesome to me. I don't know if we're just going too deep.
I always figured that Mike would be more of a J. Jonah Jameson person myself.
Just because of the gray hair or just because of the attitude and the temper, the horrible
I think if
temper.
He could just, you know, if we could just put on a porn stash on his face, I think he would make an awesome J. Jonah Jameson.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more on that, Tommy. Today we're going to do one of Tommy's favorite characters of all time. We're going to talk about Cerebus. Now, if you're a prolific reader, you might love Cerebus. I, on the other hand, I like panels and comic books and not having to spend 2 years reading. But Tommy, talk about Cerebus and why you love him so.
Well, I don't love all of Cerebus, but I do wholeheartedly like the beginnings of Cerebus. Cerebus is an independent comic produced by Dave Sims. It started out in 1977. It ran until about 2004. It was one of the first really self-published comics out there in the world. And it was just a really great story. It started out with Cerebus the Aardvark. He was a mercenary. His goal in life was to get gold so he could buy booze and get drunk. And that was pretty much his mission in life. That's all he really wanted. And the storyline kind of was his character development. He later became kind of a politician without really meaning to. He also became Pope. And the storyline was just really, really interesting and funny, hilariously funny in the beginning. Towards the middle and end of the series, it got a bit wordy. It lost some of its luster. It stopped being a comic book and started to become more of a prose story with illustrations. And a lot of the artist's personal life was really starting to affect the book. He even put himself into the book at some points, and many, many people stopped reading because it just really lost some of the humorous, funny bits that brought you into the character that was Cerebus. And it really was much more of a comedic comic in the beginning than what it ended up kind of becoming, this deep journey of spiritual awakening and finding things. Whereas in the beginning, and even when he was Pope, he literally said, God wants all your gold. specifically because he wanted to get gold so that he could buy booze so that he could be drunk. You know, it was all a big joke to Cerberus. And when it stopped becoming a big joke to Cerberus is kind of when I stopped reading, and a lot of people did. Also, one of the interesting things about Cerberus was that it was kind of one of the first comics that I ever saw with phone book editions. Before Cerberus, I never really saw any collected works of old comic books. If you wanted the old stories, granted this was in a pre-internet age, you literally had to shop from comic book store to comic book store looking for the back issues. You had to go to conventions looking for back issues. And since it was a self-published comic, for Cerberus, the first 20 or 30 books, there really wasn't a large print run. So it was hard to find those old stories, and Dave Sims reprinted them in phone book editions that were pretty affordable so that the fans could really get a hold of those stories, read them, enjoy them. And it was kind of one of the groundbreaking things of the series. Do any of you guys?
You had to go to comic book stores and go to comic book stores and look through the bins for your comics. There was none of this giant phone book or internet or everyone making it easy. No, we had to work, son.
You had to go through long boxes in the quarter bin, uphill both ways.
Yeah, some of us had to mount the horses to the buggy in order to get to the comic book store.
Look, well, we are that far.
Historians, right? Aren't we supposed to be telling the history?
We do sound old when we start talking about that, but I do want everyone to remember there was a time when the struggle was real. If you didn't have issue number 14, you were kind of out of luck. You had to really work for whatever issue number 14 in your mind was. Mikey, do you have a favorite Cerberus story you'd like to regale us with?
Well, Cerberus was, again, a great series, but I don't have a favorite series of it because I read all of Tom's phone book editions because I was too cheap and poor at the time to go out and buy them. The only comic that I can really remember Cerberus in specifically was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first volume, number 8. They had a crossover, and that was my first introduction to Cerberus, where I was like, why is there a barbarian aardvark who likes to drink? He showed nothing but disdain for the turtles, and I really enjoyed that issue, and that's why I talked to LT about it, and he was like, oh, my God, you have to read this, and handed me the phone book editions, and I agree. When he became Pope, it was hilarious.
A big thing for me, of course, is going into history and looking at how the writers are affected, because I'm always wondering about how the writers are affecting their characters and vice versa. Now, one of the big things about this particular writer was he was a prolific user of marijuana, and then he wasn't. Then he was a prolific user of LSD. Now, LSD is when everything started becoming deep and trippy and kind of stupid. That's why I never really got into it. I came across a lot of the later issues, and I never liked it all that much. But what I did like was some of those first issues where it was kind of a run and a take on Conan the Barbarian. Do you guys remember those early issues?
Of course I do. My favorite from those early issues was when he had to fight a person in a traditional way. He had a knife fight where him and his opponent were supposed to be using a 3-foot-long cord they were supposed to have in one hand and their knives in the other. Cerberus was so short that he was hanging from the cord. And they wisely thought to re-examine tradition and give a longer leather strap for them to hold on to for the fight.
Very wise, very wise. Well, that's enough about Cerberus. Now we're going to talk a little bit about what's new in comic books by going to the front of the long box. Mikey, what's at the front of the long box this week?
Well, Marvel Comics is constantly restarting their titles over and over again, and I think the reason behind it is they're trying to grab new readers, and it's the easiest way to do it is by grabbing a new reader with a number one issue. So I am going to recommend the all-new, all-different Avengers. The reason I really like the comic, it's one of my favorite writers. Mark Waid is writing it, and it has some of my favorite characters, in addition to Iron Man. They have the all-new Captain America, Sam Wilson. They also have the new Thor, or Lady Thor, as some people call her. They have Vision, and they've added Miles Morales, Spider-Man, and Nova, along with Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel. It's an excellent series. Highly recommend it. The writing is good. Mark Waid knows how to interweave the characters and play off of each other.
You know, at some point, we're going to have to do a podcast about characters we hate the most in all of comic books. I have never liked Nova. Never even understood why he's a character. Just dislike him intensely. But that's enough from in the front of the long box.
Well, actually, I'd like to point out something. From what Mike, from what you're saying, it sounds like in this new lineup of Avengers, they also kind of have a mixed age group. You know, when I was reading the Avengers, everybody was pretty much a grown up or in their 20s or 30s. But, you know, Kamala Khan is a teenager. Isn't Michael Morales also a teenager?
He is in the teenage kind of age bracket, yeah, from what I remember. Yeah,
so it seems like they're consciously mixing up the distribution of ages within that group.
Right, and the reason behind it is they're trying to bring in the younger crowd along with bringing in a new generation of Avengers. So there's no doubt about it, Miles Morales and Kamala Khan, Spider-Man and Ms. Marvel, are the two most popular characters in Marvel Comics.
All right. Well, that was enough from the front of the long box. Let's go to the back of the long box. Tommy, talk to us a little bit about something that we should have been reading in the past, but we can read right now.
I would like to bring up a comic that was part of the Ultimate series. It was Ultimate Vision. In this, the Vision is an artificial intelligence that was created by races that were preyed upon by Galactus, and she became a she in this version, apart from the old Vision, which was a male figure. This one is a female figure, and she was kind of improved upon by each race that she came across. When she gets to Earth, they convince her to kind of help fight off Galactus and save the planet that way, whereas before she was just kind of a warning beacon of, hey, Galactus is coming. He's going to eat your planet. Leave. Save yourselves. Whereas when she got to Earth, she kind of became somebody that helped kind of stray Galactus away from Earth and fight him off.
All right. Well, that was an interesting episode of the Back of the Long Box. How long ago did that come out, Tommy?
Wasn't that coming out in 2000? I think it came out in 2007, Tom.
You unholy bastard. How do you have so much information at your fingertips? It's almost as if you can travel back in time and look stuff up. Well, I'm going to talk a little bit about the social relevance of comic books. And today we do we very often give lectures on horrible, 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 horrible stereotypes in comic books. And I'm going to talk about a character that I've come across that I think we really should, you know, address at some point, and that is the Mandrill. The Mandrill is a giant monkey-like being who is a mutant. Real name is Jerome, and he affects women, superheroes, and regular women with a pheromone secretion. Now, horrible stereotypes don't always have to be, you know, an Asian character with exaggerated feature or a Jewish character who is the money grubber trope. Sometimes they can be a little bit more subtle. In the case of the Mandrill, the blatant use of a racial stereotype is kind of hidden under the guise of mutation and kind of weird superpowers. The Mandrill basically is a large African-American male who all the women crave to have, which is a play on a very old stereotype that African-American males were going to steal all the white women. I think it's important to address when these stereotypes come up in comic books so that we can see them in the future and try to say to writers, you know, I see what you're doing. Maybe you don't see what you're doing, but this isn't okay. The Mandrill character really isn't okay for a lot of reasons. He really doesn't have any place in the Marvel Universe anymore, I think. Maybe he should be completely written out. I don't think he should be, you know, erased from the annals of comic books. But I think this stereotype, along with other stereotypes, really should at some point fade away and die. And I think the Mandrill is one of those characters. Plus, I hated the way he was drawn. It's two things. Just two things about that character.
Yeah, I was always upset that they had a baboon who was wearing pants.
Yeah, I mean, why wear pants? Porky Pig, that son of a gun. Anything to add to that, Tommy? You look like you want to say something.
Yeah, I mean, and also, like, to me, it didn't really make sense. I mean, I understand that he's secreting pheromones that really make people attractive to him, but at some point, you got to think that, you know, whatever woman was there being attracted to him would be like, you are an ape. You're a monkey. You are not human. And would not be so easily coerced into doing things, regardless of the pheromones. But maybe that's just me. I just had trouble believing in him.
Very few women were able to summon the willpower to break a spell, much like the Purple Man. You can break free of the pheromone. I believe Jennifer had done it once. That was the She-Hulk. But very few other female superheroes were able to overcome that massive amount of pheromones. We also talked about in the future, we are going to do another podcast in which we talk about our favorite monkey characters. This will not be one of mine.
Yeah, he just always seemed really unbelievable to me.
All right. Oh, Detective Chimp. I'll probably talk about Detective Chimp. Just saying. All right, well, that's going to do it for Thinking Outside the Long Box. Had a great time, as always. I'd like to thank our musical stars, Kirby Crackle, who were nice enough to allow us to use their music. Always great to have Kirby Crackle on board. If you haven't bought their albums, go buy their albums on iTunes, because only you can help nerd rock flourish. Mikey, you got anything else to add?
If you're in Pensacola, Florida in February, come to Pensacon and see the comic historians there. We will be doing four, not one, not two, not three, but four panels at Pensacon. In addition to that, we may be doing something at one of the hotels that night, a little game called Last Geek Standing, but we'll get you more details on that as the time approaches. LT, anything?
I've got nothing this week.
You got nothing most weeks, my friend. I've seen your personal calendar. It's horrible. All right, guys. Thanks again for joining us from Thinking Outside the Long Box. I am Thomas Strange. That is...
I'm sorry. You're pointing at LT, not me.
Oh, see, I was doing a Brady Bunch style. We're on Skype here, and I'm just pointing in a random direction. I thought Mike would take the thing. Mike, where are you at again?
I'm not sure anymore.
Mike Manning down in New Orleans, everybody. LT over in Boston. I am Tom in Memphis. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week.
Guys, are you behaving?
Hi, Miss Manning.
Hey,
we're trying, hi. Mrs. Manning.
Well, thanks a lot. I love you.
Love you too, Miss Manning.
All right, see you later.
Oh my God, I was never more scared in my life.
Do you need a minute, Tommy?
I need a minute. My God. Guys, I literally peed myself a little bit.
I thought you were having a heart attack.